Come, spellweavers, reavers, rogues, and men-at-arms, and answer the call of adventure. Pick up your sword, your axe, your spellbook, your bow, your rulebook, and your dice, and join the forces of good in their eternal fight against vile monsters, conspiring min-maxers, horny bards, and blood-soaked murder hobos. Discover the treasure trove of role-playing games here on Rollin' Bones. My name is Ryan Howard, and I shall be your guide. Good evening, boneheads, and welcome back to Rollin' Bones with Ryan Howard, where we are making old school young again. I'm your host and king of the boneheads, Ryan Howard, and tonight I am once again joined by the author of The Living Campaign, a guide for creating and maintaining tabletop RPG campaigns, which you can find over on Amazon. I will post the link here in just a little bit. He has a great follow on Twitter, a guy who's always got a lot of insightful commentary when you follow him over on our least favorite dumpster fire that is Twitter. He is, of course, Mr. John McGowan. So I'll bring him on here in just a second. Before I do that, I want to remind everyone to like, share, and subscribe. We are growing fast here on Rollin' Bones. I'm very excited with the way things have been going this year. So, you know, let's keep that momentum strong and let's keep it rolling. And that's the best way to do it is just to, you know, give me that little algorithmic bump. It's great. It's greatly appreciated. And I'm so thankful for those of you who've done so already. Also want to remind everyone that you can find me on various social media platforms. On X and Instagram, I am at Howard_RyanGregg. YouTube is Rollin' Bones. Twitch is twitch.tv/RollinBonesRyan. And Substack is RollinBones.substack.com. I'll talk about Substack here in just a second. Something I have not mentioned over the past couple weeks that, you know, just slipped my mind, haven't mentioned it. We're actually live on X right now. Some of you are watching me on X right now, which, you know, is great. But that's another place where you can see Rollin' Bones now is over on X. You know, it's great to be over there. My follower counts are pretty close on YouTube and X. So, you know, whichever way you guys choose, I'm glad that you're tuning in. I'm glad you're watching. But that's an option for those of you out there who, you know, watch the show live on Tuesdays. Also, Substack, as I mentioned, that's where I post a lot of my thoughts on, you know, role-playing games. I'm also going to be posting a play report here tomorrow is when I'll be able to finish the article because I restarted my Nighthaven campaign. So I will be I'm playing on a regular basis. I'm now playing Axe again. So, I'm looking forward to that. My campaign is great. First session happened on Saturday. And so I'll be posting the play report for that, tomorrow, but you can find all of that over on, Substack, which is rollinbones.substack.com. Let's say hi to some of the people that are here. Dunder Moose, welcome. Always glad to have you on here. Malachi, you are steadfast as always. Let's see if I pronounce this right. Scootifer Mike. I hope that you enjoy this. I've been hearing a lot about you recently, so let's talk after the fact, and then we'll see if we can work something out. Crafty Matt is going to be here for an hour. So, while that pork shoulder is in the oven and resting, I am glad that you will be joining us. Anyway, let's go ahead and bring on the guy that you are here to see. Once again, he is the author of The Living Campaign, a guide for creating and maintaining tabletop RPG campaigns. You can find it on Amazon. The link is here in chat. That is a long ass link. That took up like three chats there. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome John McGowan back to Rollin' Bones. John, welcome back, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ryan.
Oh, no problem at all. Thanks for coming on.
Well, I'm glad to be back. I'm kind of in the circuit again. So if you follow me on Twitter, you know that I had a little bit of a career change So now I'm kind of settled into the new job, which is nice.
Yeah, absolutely. How's that going so far?
Oh, it's good. Yeah, it's definitely this new place treats me much better than old place. So basically, old place overstepped and I fired them. So
nice.
Yep.
Okay. It's always a good feeling when you leave a job on your own terms. Like the job search mm-hmm. sucks, but
yeah,
just that feeling of I don't need you guys. You know, screw y'all. I'm going my own way. That like you get that Breakfast Club fist in the air while don't you forget about me plays moment. Yeah,
yeah. It definitely was like that. They were sort of taken. You know, I was basically asked to commute across state lines every day, and I was just like, "That's not. Yeah, it's just not going to work for me." So
that wasn't in addition to across state lines. That wasn't across time zones, too, was it?
It was not. No, okay. It was. It was north. But yeah, it was. Yeah, just wasn't. It wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
So I was fully remote before. Now I'm in a hybrid position, but the company has a much healthier work culture. So it's much nicer.
Good. Well, anyway, just not to immediately dive into the bad news here, but you know, to start off our news roundup as we've been doing here on the show. Unfortunately, again, we don't have a Ginger report. Don't blame me for that. Blame Harmony for not doing something interesting enough to get mentioned on the show. So no Ginger report. However, speaking of females in the gaming space, we do have some unfortunate news here. The Citadel has fallen. Mm. Warhammer 40K introduces female custodes from Geeks and Gamers here. So the most recent source book for the Adeptus Custodes is adding in female custodes.
Yes. Yes. Very interesting. You know, I mean, it's sort of expected at this point, I suppose.
Yeah.
Games Workshop has been, as my understanding, has been somewhat embarrassed by a portion of its customer base for going on a long time now. And you know, they're going to start sort of needling to see who, you know, who they can get to leave. And, you know, every Citadel, you know, everything that sort of matters to a certain subset of people, you know, they're not looking to sort of maintain those for them, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's one of those weird things about being in the tabletop space. In a lot of ways, I feel like this space is about 5 years behind the zeitgeist on a lot of these issues. And so, like, this is something that companies were doing in 2017, 2018, 2019, as far as, like, you know, movies that were, you know, recasting characters to you know fit various DEI check boxes, to see you know comics replacing beloved characters with again you know diversity hires. This is something that was happening a long time ago, and like just now it's hitting Warhammer 40K.
Yeah, which. I mean, like the. I mean, we should be happy it sort of lasted as long as it did in the environment. I am sort of in the camp of, you know, when I, you know, a lot of people are trying to rationalize this. They try to make it make sense, you know, and I kind of see, I see a lot of people going like, well, it doesn't make sense in the lore. I'm like, this has nothing to do with the lore. Like, you don't need to be like, if you're spitting out lore arguments to something that they've been wanting to do to you anyway. Like, it's not like you're not like this is your problem is with reality and reality being imposed, basically kind of breaking containment on a self-contained kind of setting with this. And like it's the fiction is not consistent with itself. And that's the part that sucks.
Right.
And it not being consistent with itself, while also being like the parts that are being twisted are the parts specifically to just sort of do things that intentionally irritate the portion of their customer base that they don't like, that they are embarrassed by. Like there's really no rhyme or reason to it. Like there's like, oh, you know, they're going to lose sales. It's like, they don't care. You know, getting the ESG scores, the loans, that's not the point. The point is, you know, we're going to, we're going to get extra money. The money is subsidizing our ability to openly dislike you.
Yep.
You know, these are things we want to do anyway, and we're just, now we get paid for it. This is great. Like this. So.
Yeah. And this is the thing, like when I did my stream talking about, you know, the decline and inevitable death of Wizards of the Coast.
Sure.
This is something that I've talked about before. You can't rely on these properties to last forever. Mm-mm. No one out there is listening to this on their RCA radio. No one is listening to this while driving their Bantam or their Studebaker right now. Things fall apart and decay. And like, this is just the inevitability of, you know, all of this. Everything in the grand scheme of things that we love is new. Games Workshop is maybe 40 years old, probably less than 40. At some point, even Games Workshop is going to just disappear. So instead of like the people who are now in control of it, they don't want to take your lover from you. That's not what's going on here. They want to sacrifice your lover on an altar and then reanimate their corpse.
Yeah.
And like have that be a part of their macabre ritual. That's what they're doing here. Mm-hmm. And so you have to accept that everything you love will at some point pass away and die. And if you truly love something like Warhammer 40K, especially if you're in my shoes, or even if you're, you know, younger than me, guys who are in their early 20s or late teens, you see what they're doing to this thing that you loved. Use your passion for this thing to make the next thing. That's what we should be concentrating our energy on. Of course they're going to do this. Of course this is, you know, the course of action that they decide to take. So why not just say, all right, if you want to kill it, kill it. We will, we'll carry forth its memory and build something even grander.
Yeah. Well, and this is, you know, I've thought about this a lot, and I, you know, the age of like ubiquity is over. Like the shared cultural value shared cultural kind of entertainment phenomenon went away with season 8 of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You know, that was the last time, you know, that we all kind of got together. You know, the future, especially like for people in these spaces, the future is dubs are on. Okay, it's Muppets all the way down. the future is like my very like stringently historically accurate fantasy campaign, you know, like it's going to be like these little things. Like we're gonna start returning a little bit to like the campfire tales, you know, talking about the Kingdom of Prester John that, you know, that's out there, this like secret African Christian kingdom. Yeah. You know, and it's going to be one of those things where like the stories that we're going to tell is going to be a lot more siloed. It's going to be, I think it's going to be like more like archipelagos. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have these, and I think that's kind of ultimately going to be a good thing, because the people who are in those communities are going to be like very, very tight knit.
Yeah.
And what is the point of this? If like, what is the point of a franchise that I have to basically go to war to protect like every day of my life?
Mm-hmm.
Like, or feel the need to, I actually can't protect it as a consumer. I'm not on the board, but like, I feel this, like, but I do feel this, you know, I've got shelves and shelves of Warhammer fiction, you know, And I was like, I wake up one day and I realize that like the company that I purchased these from like doesn't really like me that much, you know, and they hide it under a veil of plausible deniability. That's kind of what I'm looking at as like, I see it as like, it's going to be a start, like a lot more regional, a lot more sort of group specific. And I think that's fine. I think that's great.
Yeah. And even like, let's be frank. There's a lot of guys out here who, are right wingers who love Warhammer 40K. Like that's a meme for a reason. But what you have to realize is Warhammer 40K, like by authorial intention, was never meant to be right wing. They just didn't understand what they were satirizing and accidentally created something that was beautifully and inherently right wing.
Yeah, mega based, right?
Yeah. It's the time old story of accidental baseness. It's the same thing you get in like when you read Judge Dredd.
Right.
Like the people who write Judge Dredd have like, they don't know that they think Judge Dredd's the villain of his own story when in reality, no, not even close.
No. And I think, you know, I think they were probably better at it. You know, years and years ago, like, I'm not sure, you know, 20, like even 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I'm not sure that like the people kind of running it now have the requisite subtlety, you know, or the requisite like self-seriousness. Like I think they probably were a little more self-serious back then. Like that, you know, of course they're, you know, they're libs, you know, and they're kind of always like kind of a certain stripe, but I don't think, you know, I think straight up, they were just more talented back then.
Yeah.
You know, full stop. And I think they're both, kind of ideologically captured, as well as incompetent, and I think that's a very strange combination. And maybe, you know, and even if they are smart, like I think it probably is more, I think the bitterness sort of outweighs that. They're very bitter, kind of, I was going to say toward certain people, but I think kind of very generally as well.
Yep. And to answer some of the chats that we're getting here, Orcus Dorcas, Games Workshop is a bona fide establishment. They aren't going anywhere, but whatever it is they will become in the future will be unrecognizable from what it is. I mean, this is the path of D&D. This is the path of all of these kind of establishment lifestyle brands that gaming and nerd culture have taken on. The thing itself is dead. It's being Weekend at Bernie's around so that you know, people can pretend it's still alive. It's this kind of macabre ceremony of watching the thing that you love's body being paraded around as if it was still real. I go back to there's this country song. John, are you very familiar with country music?
Yeah, I'm actually located in the South, so probably by osmosis.
Are you familiar with the Joe Diffie song "Prop Me Up Beside the Jukebox If I Die"?
I'm not.
So the premise of the song is basically just a guy who likes to party saying, "If I die tonight, you prop me up beside the jukebox, put a beer in my hand, and like keep the party going." But the video for the song is just it's Weekend at Bernie's, but in a honky tonk. It's hilarious. And so like when I think about what companies are doing to these IPs now, I think about that video. It died somewhere along the way, but they're just going to pretend like it didn't. They're just going to keep it going.
Yeah. Well, it's just now it's starting to smell. And that's kind of what this is. Cause it's not, you know, it's like, if you take it in its like kind of its requisite parts, you're not exactly, you know, it's very easy for them when you get kind of annoyed by this, and if you're not really haven't thought about it, for them to point and to just kind of run with your irritation and be like, "Oh, so you hate women," you know? And it's like, well, no, what I hate is like kind of the imposition of your, like your weird little like hang ups. Cause like when you do this thing, I'm kind of reminded that, you know, the world outside of this exists and it has an opinion on, mm-hmm. on the thing, on these things. So.
Gotcha. So yeah, Warhammer 40K, they finally did it. They finally, flipped the switch. They sought Canadian healthcare and now they are.
Yep. I would just say, like, I know a lot of people are very upset because, like, they rightfully are interpreting things as being sort of targeted at them. And, yep. I would just sort of tell people, like, look, you know, this is, corporate. It's probably good that, you know, we feel like we can kind of get to a point where we feel like we could step away from, you know, the corporate slop.
Yep.
And, you know, as awesome and based as Warhammer 40K could be, you know, at the end of the day, it, you know, they have a stock ticker.
Yep.
You know, and now, like, you are, I'm having way more fun with my kind of like my homegrown kind of, like living campaign, than I ever did with any corporate IP. So, like, yeah. That's kind of the thing I enjoy now, and I'm closer with my friends than ever. I've been adding more people to that group. So, I don't know. I like that's real. Okay, spending a ton of money. Like, we can do war stuff. We could play war games all we want, and spending a ton of money to go and play in a tournament for people that like don't like me very much. Like, I don't see the point of that.
Right. Yep. The last thing to say about this is I am preparing myself for the inevitability that, you know, when basically the mainstream Warhammer 40K ambassador Henry Cavill finally has to comment on this, he's just going to say, you know, it's good that we're branching out. I'm preparing for him to give the stock answer.
Yeah.
A small part of me is hoping that Henry Cavill is just going to be like, nah, man, shit's gay. And,
and yeah, then, I don't know.
If he does that, if he's like, no, this is stupid, why would you do this? Like,
well, he got himself, he got himself asked politely to leave off The Witcher. So mm-hmm. Who knows?
So moving on from there, one of the topics that you wanted to discuss about, you know, some of the things that I've talked about here recently and some of the topics that have been kind of, you know, popping up in our circles. Of course, you know, the most recent update from MCDM is still kind of alive in the discourse right now. And you had some thoughts about that. So, you know, go ahead and kind of share what you were thinking or what you wanted to say about that particular side of things. Of course, you know, for those of you who are just now tuning in, we're talking about the Power Roll video that Matt Colville posted and the community reaction to, some of these updates coming out of the Matt Colville camp right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so Matt Colville is definitely trying to cultivate an audience, and he is doing, you know, which frankly I find somewhat refreshing, in that he does have like a targeted direction he wants to go, as opposed to just sort of blanket trying to get as many people as he can and then rug pulling the ones he doesn't want.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you're getting. Well, I would say that you have you know who you are if you're kind of interested in this.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's fine. I kind of view this as somewhat beside the point. So, like, when you look at MCDM, it is a marketing strategy with kind of like a game dressing around it. And which, you know, is probably a little dismissive to the people working on it, but that's fine. They don't know me. And what... that's what they're doing. They're kind of doing, like, they're building a product and they're going to try to sell this product to like a customer base. And we're like, any, like, if I don't see how that it overlaps with us at all, because we're trying basically create these games. Like, it seems like what we're trying to do over here is sort of create the reemergence of the 70s game club.
Yeah.
And MCDM is like never going to be that. 1D&D is never going to be that. And as far as things like I'm interested in the things that I would want to watch very closely for kind of trying to subvert, they would also be trying to do that, but twisting it. Like, that's the things you want to watch for. MCDM is going to be its own thing. It's in its own orbit. Like, I barely even would classify it as a hobby. Like, it's a hobby in the same way, you know, like a game, like, I don't know, like playing video games by yourself is a hobby. It's like, yeah. I don't like, hobbies are something generally you do and you share with people. Mm-hmm. So, and like, I don't really know how many campaigns are going to kind of emerge from these things. Cause it seems to be, they're always either very small to, or they just never get off the ground at all. And it seems like we're playing a lot, but
yeah. Yeah. And what people don't realize is we're playing for long periods of time. Well, I say we, I am finding myself in a situation where I just restarted a campaign. So I am still finding my feet as I'm incorporating these ideas into my table, just to put all my cards on the table there. But you're onto something there. The people in our camp, the bros, or, you know, even the people who are just kind of around the bros, you know, people like in Basic Experts community or, you know, stuff like that. We're playing for longer periods of time with the same people. We're, you know, we're creating these worlds as we go rather than playing in a world that's already been created where all the cool stuff has already been done.
Right.
Like, every session is a new discovery. Every session is a new chance for adventure that takes you in a completely different direction than the one you were already on. This is something that when you play according to the Colville model, or when you play according to the 1D&D model, you absolutely cannot recreate.
No, no. And for that reason, I don't really view it as a threat. You know, because nobody, like, anybody who's sort of coming over my house to play in my AD&D campaign is not really sitting there trying to like steer me onto MCDM. What they're doing is they're coming to my campaign and they're getting involved and they're building a bunch of characters and they become kind of like a permanent fixture, you know? And even if they have to step away from the campaign for a bit, they're still sort of a part of the campaign. Like, they're still involved in the group chats. I found out some of my players go golfing on the weekends together now. They did not know each other before my campaign.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, when I first was like trying to get my job switched, you know, who was the first people that started offering me, you know, like trying to, hey, send me your resume. I bet I can kind of like finagle you into something here. Like, these are the first people that were going to bat for me. Like, this is a very tight knit group and we didn't start that way. And that's the kind of campaigns that like I advocate for. Like, so yeah. When I see people getting really like, so when MC, like when Matt Colville wants to get rid of the power rule, okay, like, cool. Like, but I that's like, it's like, it's, you can call it tabletop RPGs, but like, it's something else at that point. Like, I'm sorry. Like, there's like, we're not even the same genre. We're not on the same planet.
Mm-hmm. And part of what's driving that, in my opinion, and I believe this to be absolutely correct, especially after the recent developments and the most recent video, both Matt Colville and Wizards of the Coast are developing a digital first experience. They want you to play online using their proprietary VTTs with your friends and be a part of their ecosystem. They're building a video game in all but name. Right. We are not doing that at all. We're building real life communities, tight knit with, you know, people who not just, you know, come together and play a game once a week, twice a week, however frequently you play, but, you know, are connected with each other in a meaningful way. You know, we're kind of looking at bowling alone and going, we don't want to live like that anymore. We're pushing into, what used to be. We're trying to bring back that club mentality. And so I think you're right that we are at this point building two different parallel ecosystems. And I think one of them is a lot stronger than the other, a lot more sustainable over time.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's very driven by, so like the kind of getting into like the 1D&D, like it's very driven by like money and prestige, which, you know, a lot of things are, you know, and you have to some extent, like you can't be like debase, like you can't do things that debase yourself, you know? So it's like, you do need to have like somewhat prestige is a component. But I think this sort of like driving force of like economic primacy I don't think that's what we're doing at all. Right. I think there probably is like, there's definitely an interest in making money, and I think that's like normal and fine. And there's probably going to be some people that try to get in and, you know, turn it into like a business model, which is also normal and fine. You're not going to have everybody who's sort of like a quote unquote true believer, but I think the ecosystem that we're trying to build is definitely less inclined to try to develop into a business model. Like it's not interested in money. Mm-hmm. Kind of as a primary thing, money would be nice, but it's not like the driving force of everything I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know? So obviously like I need it to work, but yeah, I don't know. Like I look at that. Yeah. I think that's sort of like the big difference is that they're just like so completely hooked into the economic model that they're not really thinking about anything else.
Yeah. And to your point there, to bring a wrestling analogy into this, legendary wrestling manager Jim Cornette has the saying of, are you selling the sizzle or the steak?
Mm.
Our community is mostly selling the steak, and maybe we need a little bit more sizzle in there. Maybe we need some kind of big splashy show off moment so that people can really, you know, like get a glimpse of our power. But on the other side, you've got MCDM, you've got 1D&D, and all they have is sizzle. All they have is sound and fury and showmanship. And, you know, here's these highly produced videos. Here's, you know, this completely curated experience. But when you actually sit down to bite into that sizzling steak, it's not there. There's nothing there. They don't even put a steak in front of you. So.
Yeah. Well, and you know, this might be like completely off the mark, but I'm sort of reminded of, you know, Thomas Carlyle. He goes on about sham kings.
Yeah.
And I sort of like there's definitely like kind of an energy there that I think they're like the sham king energy, where it's like these people are at the top of their game, but they're just not interested in being completely driven or being kind of turned by the forces around them, instead of being the ones who are like being the tastemakers.
Yeah.
You know, which I think, you know, say what you will, like we lack resources, but I think at least in here in this sphere is like, we're trying to be tastemakers.
Mm-hmm.
And, I even the attempt at that, I think is probably ultimately in the long term, like, very powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Rocky and Apollo Creed. You've got someone who is taking this very seriously. You know, we're scrappy, we're underdogs, but we're fighting and we're taking it very seriously. And then you've got the guy at the top who thinks it's a show. And mm-hmm. at some point they're going to have this moment like Apollo had in the corner with Tony. Those of you who are Rocky fans, where Tony, his trainer, says he doesn't know this is a show. He thinks it's a damn fight. That's what we're going to have in this community at some point. So
yeah, I think that's accurate. You know, I mean, I don't think it's an accident that, like, you know, the kind of the bigger names here are like essentially Anons.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, that's what we're dealing with here. That's you know, we're looking at, you know, these kind of smaller, scrappier upstart communities on our side. You know, we're building we're building our hobbies. Mm-hmm. You know, like Calvinoni here in chat says, we don't need monoliths to have our hobby. We can still play without these, you know, titans standing over us. You know, many people played before any of this was cool, and, you know, will be playing long after it has, you know, passed into uncoolness again.
Yeah, God willing. Yeah. I'm always reminded of it reminds me of something I recently read. I was reading a book on the Middle Ages, and it was sort of talking about how some of the like towns and villages were so insular that they had developed independent dialects like 10 miles from each other. And it was sort of presenting that as like, yeah, look, see how negative that is. I don't know, like. That seems like it might be like, seems like the people within those communities were probably, they probably had a very clear idea of what was going on. But that's kind of what I'm thinking, you know, it's probably, I don't think it's insane to think that something similar might end up happening here. Which is great for keeping people out that, don't like you. So,
Yeah, I mean, to speak to some of what people are saying here in chat, Space King of Space, I long for the day it becomes uncool again. I like, that's what we're dealing with here in all of nerd culture, is our ideas have completely run the spectrum at this point. They've gone from being, fringe and edgy to being adopted by some, kind of early adopters who are okay with a little bit of edginess, and then they've sanded off some of the edges, brought it into more and more acceptable spaces. And, you know, just as it kind of travels down this pipeline of becoming more and more socially acceptable, everything that makes it cool, edgy, interesting is gradually filed off until it just becomes the same homogenized, processed, packaged gray goop that everything else eventually becomes. And then at that point, it's interesting to no one, and it's discarded. So, you know, we're just waiting for people to throw this aside so that we can kind of have our spaces back again.
Yeah, well, they're not. I think that like that is going to be getting increasingly harder to do because the culture has become so fragmented. Kind of the broader, like the actual like broader culture has become so fragmented and turned like a kaleidoscope of like little communities that all sort of distrust each other. You get to the point to where sort of like the next, like, I don't like, what is going to be the next big thing? Cause it seems like a lot of big things are dying and are being replaced by nothing.
Yep. Like you were saying, the next big thing implies that there's some kind of cultural homogeneity, and that like just doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not around.
Yeah. No. And like good riddance. You know, humanity started by, you know, with campfire stories, and you know that's where we'll return. And like, and I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Is probably healthier. Like, are we really supposed to share kind of a space with like hundreds of thousands, millions of people? Like, does that, I don't know. It seems to make the people who are kind of steering that miserable and or psychotic. I don't know. I'd rather kind of prefer to sort of be in a much more manageable community of people whose names and faces I know. But maybe that's just me.
So speaking of our kind of edgy outsider spaces and maybe how they're influencing people who are closer to the center, we're not going to play this video. I've done too many video reactions recently, so we're not going to actually watch this tonight. But I want to show you all something. I want you to have a gander at this. So you guys are all familiar with one Ben Milton, aka Questing Beast. He's one of the more influential voices in what has been wrought upon what was once the OSR. And just today, he released a video called The Man Who Accidentally Invented Role-Playing Games. Basically, just going over the story of David Wesley and the Bronstein and, you know, the days before Arneson and Gygax and Dungeons and Dragons. To hearken back to something I said on Diversity in Dragons, I just have this loop in my head of that that song by Styx from the album Kilroy Was Here. Haven't we been here before?
Yeah. Hey, you know, I figure like that's how you know your idea is catching fire, right? Is you get a QB video.
Mm-hmm. And you know, rightfully so. Jeffro Johnson was very upset about this. Like, you can understand why. Jeffro's mm-hmm. been talking about this for years.
Yeah.
And even beyond just Jeffro, like, there's a whole documentary called Secrets of Blackmore. Don't know if you saw it.
Never heard of it. Just kidding. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, in Jeffro's case, I'm extremely sympathetic because, he's been shouting this, he's been banging this drum forever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, yeah, I get the guy's like pugilistic, but, credit where credit is due.
Yep.
Like, you can't say he hasn't been passionate about this, like these particular things. Like, come on.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's done this before. This is not the first time that Questing Beast has reached into, kind of the discourse around, our circles and just kind of like been like, okay, let me take this idea as my own. Let me pretend like I came up with this. Or let me pretend like this was my epiphany. He does this all the time. Mm-hmm. He did this with One-to-One Time. He's done this over and over again. Mm-hmm. And
go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you can go ahead.
So he's interesting because it's not, because I don't think he's like all that interested in some of these ideas either. But he knows that they get some traffic, or mm-hmm. at least like they're interesting. Like he's gotten pretty good at, I think, probably predicting something that's going to be algorithmically beneficial to him. And One-to-One Time. So the thing with him, like what he's doing is, yeah, he's like taking from it, he's popularizing it, but he's like giving no details, like right. how to do it, what it means, what it. It's almost like a hype man video. I remember watching it a while ago, and it basically funneled me directly to here, because it was like, well, that tells me nothing. And then you try to read the DMG, and the DMG is just like somewhat opaque in its prose, and you're sort of forced to kind of go like look for like, well, I guess there's got to be some community who's using this, and here mm-hmm. we are. So I it is insulting, don't get me wrong, like I said, like it sucks, but at the same time, like the way he goes about it is in such a way that it like gives the people that are interested, he hypes it up, the people are get interested, they don't know how to do it, and then they have to learn, and that's how they end up here.
Yep. Yeah, and this kind of goes back to the idea that I brought up about ideas kind of going through these stages where they start on the fringes and then are gradually made more and more acceptable as, you know, like edges are sanded off.
Sure.
That's all that Questing Beast is doing right now. He's finding these ideas that are presented by people like Jeffro or B-Dubs or, you know, hell, Macho Mandolf is right here in chat, like he always is. And once again, Macho Mandolf, thank you for supporting us here.
Yeah, man.
You see these people talking about these ideas, but they talk about them in kind of this code language, or, you know, kayfabe, as they like to say, to again, you know, bring wrestling into it. And all Ben is doing is kind of, you know, plucking these ideas out of their discourse and dusting off all the kayfabe, dusting off all the various personalities. You know, he's not suggesting that you use Muppets in your game, for example, and then presenting them as his own idea. And on one hand, yes, there's this positive aspect of people are hearing these ideas. They're hearing them from someone that they trust and are then, you know, seeking out more information and maybe eventually finding Jeffro or finding B-dubs or even just, you know, reading the AD&D Dungeon Master's Guide for the first time in its entirety. But at the same time, you also have this guy treating people with actual, you know, intellectual rigor, who are actually doing work and actually thinking about these ideas in depth. He's treating us like a farm system. He's just coming in, and once the ideas are presentable at a certain point, he's just kind of like picking them up and go, that's mine now.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, like, for me, I would look at it in terms of, you know, if I had to put it, like, basically in friend enemy terms, is this person making it harder for me to operate? And I guess, you know, or the bros, like the bros are to operate. And I just don't, I don't see QB sort of smashing or like kind of suppressing that community, because frankly, like, I don't think they can be suppressed. Right. And, you know, but I mean, I don't think he's even like even really trying. So it's really sort of just sort of like a parasitic arrangement. Yeah. Like maybe there's some like robbing of momentum, I guess. Like it's like, it's hard to say. It's not somebody who's like basically in open war, you know, like certain other people. Yeah. And I find that to be like actually dangerous, especially with, you know, accusations that get lobbied around very casually. I don't know, I said maybe I'm too tolerant of perhaps slimy behavior, but I'd rather deal with slimy than getting like grenades lobbed at me all the time.
Yeah. And
if I had to pick one,
we've got some people kind of expressing similar sentiments here in chat. Just to give credit where it's due, you know, Crafty Matt says that QB is an anchor man. He takes big stories and dumps them down for the masses. That's a good way to put it. And then
I said a lot of words to get there. Yeah. Thanks, Crafty.
And that's the magic of Crafty.
You know.
Uh-oh. And then I'm trying to find, oh, here, R-Dubs has a good point here as well. This isn't popular, but this is a normal cycle of information dispersal. Yeah, that's correct. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, that's what happens. If you look at the popular one that everyone always uses, you know, punk rock, some of the OGs of punk were the popularizers, like, you know, the Ramones, the Sex Pistols. But you've got these relatively edgy outsider bands, and then you've got bands that come in like Green Day or Blink 182, and they kind of clean up punk a little bit and present it in a way that is acceptable to your TRL audience. And it's just what happens when something catches on. It's you know, the way of things. You can't hold on to these ideas forever and keep them pure unless you're willing to accept that other people are going to adulterate your ideas. And, you know the truth. If you're comfortable, just like Flannery O'Connor said, you will know the truth and the truth shall make you odd. If you're comfortable with that, it's okay. And you can cope with it. But if you're not, you're going to have a bad time. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, there's a, you know, if, you know, if you're like a real radical about these sorts of things, chances are like you are going to eventually sort of acquire an audience. And as you get more popularized, you're going to start running into the problem of the audience, kind of the lowest common denominator of your thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, what you get for popularity is a lot more people. You get like, you have to deal with like a higher percentage of idiots.
Yeah.
Like that's the reward for popularity, you know? So, which also sort of makes sense. Like when you're sort of dealing with this thing and then you're having to like, once it starts to like balloon out of control, you're having to deal with like this, sort of infusion of people, you know, that you can't, they don't really get it. And it just sort of makes sense that like following from that, like they're not, your thing is going to start kind of decaying at that point.
Yeah.
And then it makes way for like kind of the new thing. It's like, it's this like kind of the circle of life with the way these things go. You know, I fully plan on in 15 years becoming like completely out of touch and getting, displaced by somebody else. Or, yeah. You know, God willing, longer. I'm going to be like, you know, it's going to be 20 years, 30 years. Eventually it's going to happen. Like as plugged in as I feel right now, eventually I won't be. And that's fine.
Yep. In the immortal words of Abe Simpson, I was with it once and then it changed and it'll happen to you.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, and I think that's just what, you know, WotC's dealing with is like, they're sort of terminally out of touch. So, and Games Workshop for that matter. So, yeah.
And, you know, for as much as we talk about, you know, Questing Beast being an acceptable source for a lot of people's information, you look at his actions versus, you know, the way that the BroSR acts. Yeah, the BroSR is abrasive on Twitter, but we've got someone here in chat, Brother Grognard, who was kicked out of the Discord server and the Nave 2 Kickstarter because he was raising questions about Questing Beast printing copies of his deluxe edition Nave 2 and bringing them to GaryCon before backers actually got them. So yeah, on one hand, Jeffro and B-Dubs and Crossface and whoever can be spicy on Twitter. But on the other hand, you've got a guy who's stabbing his Kickstarter backers in the back and then silencing all dissent.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Jeffro and B-Dubs's blogs are free.
Yeah.
You know, and that's also kind of segues is all of my kind of Substack stuff is always going to be free as far as advice goes. The only thing I'm ever going to put behind paid posts is fiction. So, but yeah, like, cause like I'm passionate about this hobby. They're passionate about this hobby. So it's sort of, that's what I've talked about, like not being interested in kind of the economic side. So like Jeffro has his book, but most of his content's free. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So
mm-hmm.
Got to keep the lights on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm saying this as someone who also has a Kickstarter adventure out there that I'm working on and going to deliver or.
Mm-hmm.
I hesitate because I don't want people to think that I don't have this thing written. I do. It's just, I know the second I start talking crap about someone doing something underhanded or crappy with their Kickstarters, immediately I'm going to run into some kind of issue where it looks like I'm doing the same thing. I'm going to run into some kind of complication. So
I find that just like kind of boldly owning whatever it is that you've done, you know, and whether it be like, you know, you're just explaining yourself. you know, or whatever. Not apologizing, just being like, this is what I did. All right. You can be mad about it, but this is what I did. You know, that's definitely one thing. It's the underhanded side of things where it's like, actually, we're not going to talk about it, and I'm just going to delete you from the campaign. So, like, that's the part I think is kind of the real sin. But like, if I did that, if I printed, you know, if I I would probably just own it. I'd be like, yeah, like GaryCon comes once a year. I didn't want to wait a whole year. Sorry, guys.
Yep.
So.
And Calvinoni in chat here is telling me not to jinx myself. Cal, you're one of my backers. So.
Oh, the shareholders are in the audience. Oh, my goodness.
The shareholders are right here.
All right. Well,
a lot of these people have a lot of money tied up in Guts and Glory Volume 1. So,
heck yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's really the long and short of that drama. On one hand, you hate to see it be someone like Questing Beast, who's been such a shit heel recently. But on the other hand, it's inevitable that it's going to be someone, you know, hopefully it's some, even, you know, at, you know, by the same token, Harmony Ginger is also talking about these ideas. She is crediting the bros who explained them to her, but she's also participating in this process of disseminating the information to people who are not willing to put up with the edginess of the bros. Mm-hmm. And I think she's doing it in better faith than Questing Beast is, because he's just stealing. She's trying to explain how she's using them at her table. But at some point it was going to happen. It's just a matter of how are we going to go about this? How are we going to make sure that, you know, the people who did the work on this are getting the credit they deserve? You know, it's a matter of just being classy with it, I think, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, it's fashion. Okay, things like this comes to fashion. Like, this is the, you know, we're in the fashion show stage of where everything looks really weird, you know, and it's going to get disseminated. And that's, it just means, you know, the people who are adopting it now and who are at the top and are participating, you know, they're just at the tip of the spear. You know, they're like saying, you know, basically people who want to kind of like sit around. Yeah, like people who are working together in this community are the ones who like that just means they're sort of like the elite of this. People start aping them when somebody can like yell at you and get mad at you, blah, 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 whatever. If they start aping you, that means you're in charge.
Right.
So like, it's like that's kind of the long and short of it. That's why, like, if somebody wants to copy me, if somebody wants to rip me off, that means I'm in control. That means I'm in charge. And that means they're copying me. Okay, they're lower status than me. And not to say I'm having like an ego trip over here, but like, if you want to get down on the nuts, like the political nuts and bolts of what is happening, they are kind of acknowledging that by doing that.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of, that takes on a life of its own. So, cause like always sort of being on the back foot if you're the guy plagiarizing, you know?
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Cool. So as we're kind of coming towards the end of our time here, are there any other topics that you wanted to discuss or, you know, anything else you want to talk about?
No, I kind of think I was like, you know, I shilled for, like my idea with, trying to just, you know, we're trying to form game clubs and go out there and form game, like you form your campaigns, guys, with the idea that you are going to create a club of close knit friends who are going to support each other. And then add people, find ways to add people, and maybe even get more games going, find a way to do it. Because I think, you know, getting together, even if you got to do it over the internet, it's suboptimal. But if you could do it in real life, especially, do it. You know, there's always a way to make it work. So,
yeah.
But that's kind of, I guess that'd be my final thought. That'd be what I like to like leave it off on.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. So once again, I want to remind everyone that you can get John's book, The Living Campaign, A Guide for Creating and Maintaining Tabletop RPG Campaigns on Amazon. Here's a shorter link that will be popping up in chat, one that does not take up four messages each. So, and you guys will find it linked in the pinned comment below this this replay as well. For those of you who are watching after the fact, John, thank you so much for coming on again. I think we've had some great discussions tonight. I also want to remind everyone, if you are buying this book and you are reading it, leave a review for John. It's one of these things that helps independent creators like us out. If you enjoy what you're reading, leave that review to let people know that you got something out of it. If you don't enjoy it, also leave a review. Mm-hmm. Let us know what constructive feedback you have. It's the most important thing we can have as independent creators, to know, one, that people are enjoying it, but two, what people want to see more of, want to see less of, how they suggest we go about improving as we continue as creators.
Mega Blizzard Man, thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Patty's Parlor, that is commendable. Alternative sites are always needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alternative sites, like at this point, we do need alternatives. We need our alternatives to Amazon. We need a drive-through alternative. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of people need to build tools that are usable and need to not do things that turn off major creators that can, point other people towards using your platforms. And I think you all know who I'm talking about when I say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a thought, but I lost the plot.
Cool. So Cal here in chat wants to know what the book is. Once again, Cal, it is The Living Campaign, A Guide for Creating and Maintaining Tabletop RPG Campaigns. And John, do you want to just give a quick rundown to anyone who is not familiar with the book already, what they will be getting when they pick this thing up?
Yeah. So it's basically a kind of, it's a two-part book, 150 pages, pretty readable. The cover is very nice, so if you don't like it, it'll look good on your shelf, promise. And so part one is basically trying to kind of step-by-step set up a campaign. And I try to distill it to the sort of the points that matter as far as like longevity and getting people together and being sort of insulated from scheduling conflicts and that sort of thing. To name kind of the big thing is scheduling conflicts kill campaigns, and that's I think if you run a game kind of what I'm talking about, the way I kind of talk about, you're not really going to have that problem too much. Yeah. And then part two is sort of a logical defense of why, like, it's why I tell you to do the things I say in part one. So if you're sort of bought in, you don't really need to read part two. But I think it's good. I think it's still good to read the second half just so you can kind of like understand sort of the spirit of it as well, because then when you run into things that are outside of kind of the scope, you'll be able to sort of you'll be trained on kind of what to look for and like kind of what's important. So, but yeah, so, and that's sort of what it is a, just a, it's a guide to creating a reactive sandbox tabletop campaign.
Yep. Yeah. And just to kind of give people, this is something I've been thinking a lot about, just to kind of, leave people with a last point of discussion and, just to give us a few more minutes to talk here. One of the biggest things with a sandbox campaign is the game should always be available. The players might not always be available, but the game is available. And so what that means is you as the referee are available. Mm-hmm. Whether it's every week, every other week, twice a week, whatever your frequency, say there will be a game, who can make it? And then you run with whoever's there, whether it is six people or two people, or, you know, maybe even just one person can make it. There's a game, we're going to do something. And then the people who show up, they get to advance their characters. They get to participate. They get to affect the campaign world. And the people who don't show up as frequently or who don't make it a priority, they either realize, hey, I need to make this a priority if I want to be at the same level as everyone else, or they drop. And you very much have to, as the game master, you are taking on the responsibility of, I will be here at this time more often than not. I will be consistently available, barring major events or, tragedies or family emergencies. There will be a game every other week, every week, however frequently. And then the people who show up, they get the benefits of showing up.
Right. And, also the benefits of sandbox campaign is that it teaches you how to actually use those tables. You do have the bandwidth as the DM to be able to run on a weekly or biweekly basis. I'm kind of like running semi-weekly, I guess, like sometimes weekly, sometimes biweekly, but that's really more of a scheduling thing personally.
Yeah.
So, because we sort of, like, my wife also transitioned from a full-time job to a part-time job. So, and then I sort of gave up my job. it sort of impacted game a little bit. I had to drop one of my campaigns, put it on hold. But one of my players actually had been trained on how to play that, and he picked it up and has been running on that part of the on the online game for me. So that's also kind of the good thing about it kind of a very open game, is it sort of teaches players, it could teach players how to run one on their own.
Yeah.
What to look for and what to expect.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a very valuable thing, especially something that I've noticed, and I might give copies of this to my players who are new, because there's this idea that we were talking about this just today in Basic Experts Gilded server. There are people who can immediately pick up the style of play and be elite from go because they don't have any bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of players still need to be taught how to participate in a game that's run this way, because all of the culture surrounding these things that draw people in do not encourage this kind of living campaign sandbox style play. They're very much in the critical role camp. And when you get people who have no exposure to role playing other than watching an actual play or something like that, they run into some issues, and they don't fully understand what to do there. And so a resource like this book is actually very helpful for onboarding those players into, look, this is how you should play.
Yeah. If you want to be part of this campaign, I think the important thing is to not like really sort of try to be aware of what those players are coming from. Yeah. And not overselling it, like, oh, you're gonna be able to, it's gonna be everything like you wanted to do and more. It's gonna be like, no, it's actually very different in these key ways, and like, mm-hmm. here's how, and making sure that they're aware, because it's just, I mean, that's just normal thing. You should have a filter for your players. I talk about that. So
yeah,
either I send the invites, or if somebody kind of petitions me, I'm like, there's a process that I kind of go through for making sure that they're going to be a good fit. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And the biggest hurdle to overcome is just getting players to realize, yes, your choices matter. Now you have to make choices.
Mm. I feel like that's easier for new players than the ones who've had the creativity just beaten out of them over the years.
I actually have a counterexample to that, because my last attempt at running a campaign before this most recent one fell apart.
Oh.
Because I told the players, you have to decide what to do here. You guys have to decide where to go, what to pursue, and I will react to the choices you make.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided to do nothing.
Oof.
Literally, like, at one point someone asked me, why aren't we getting experience? To which I said, you're not doing anything.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll do it. Yeah. I mean, it's... Yeah. That is a hard thing to sort of overcome. Like, once you see that, like, kind of set in. I've had some success with... I think factions do a lot, like, kind of rolling to see what, like, factions or what monsters or whatever show up in the area. But I don't mean to talk shop, but I think that is the hardest thing. But, and that's kind of the thing you want to look for in your players, I guess, if you have potential players.
Yep. Well, John, once again, thank you for coming on the show. It's been a blast talking to you, and we will definitely bring you back on again to do something like this again.
Sure. Yeah, it was fun. I always have fun. So
cool. Well, guys, that's going to be it for the show tonight. Next week, DM Blackwall will be back. We'll probably be doing something a lot like this, where we go over the news, talk about, you know, what's been happening in the world of role-playing games. And then, you know, we'll do some discussion on Horde Wars, because, you know, with DM Blackwall, we got to talk about his game. We got to talk about some of the stuff that he's been doing on that side of things. But until then, whether you rolled a 1 or a 20, I'm so glad that you rolled your bones with me, Ryan Howard, and I will see you guys next time.